Welcome to Calling Home. I'm your host, Idrissa Matar. The song you just heard is called Malinjira, which means the day that was in Afan Oromo. It's by Oromo musician and activist Hachalu Hundessa. Hundessa was sadly shot and killed in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia in 2020. This killing created a massive uproar and protest amongst Oromo people. Many were arrested and killed during the uproar. Hundessa sang songs regarding the liberation of Oromo people and their historical struggles in Ethiopia. There's a lot of speculation surrounding his killings, however, two men have been arrested. The Oromos are the largest ethnic group in East Africa, and the majority of them live across the country of Ethiopia. Oromos have had a difficult history in modern-day Ethiopia and as well as in former Abyssinia, particularly with the ethnic group Amharas. Amharas have had power for a long time until recently. Oromo culture, history, and language has historically been considered as inferior. There have been processes of Amharicization under the dictatorship of Haile Selassie, where he banned Oromo language in public spaces in 1941. Afan Oromo, which is the language Oromo people speak, was forbidden until 1991 due to a regime change. Music is a way for you to express yourself, your identity, and the language you speak. So, imagine finally being able to sing in public spaces in a language that was once forbidden. In today's episode of Calling Home, we will discuss Oromo music with our guest, Fayo Said. Ms. Fayo Said is an international studies student, and she was born and raised in Amsterdam. She's currently writing her thesis on how Oromo music is being used as a tool of resistance. Ms. Said herself is of Oromo descent and has felt compelled to share the story of her people. Let's hear what Ms. Said has to say about this topic.
Hi, I'm Idrissa Matar, and I'm with Fayo Said today. Would you like to introduce yourself, Said?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. My name is Fayo Said, and I'm a student at Leiden as well. I study international studies with a focus on Africa, and I'm here today to have a conversation with Idil about Oromo music, and I'm very excited.
I'm excited to have you. Thank you for coming to my studio. So I would hear their songs everywhere. I was in the Netherlands in an Oromo household, listening to Oromo music every day. How do you feel that impacted you?
So just for some context, I was born in 1993. My parents came to the Netherlands in the early 90s and in the 80s separately. I think it had a huge impact actually on me and how I see myself and forming my identity, because it was something that was always around me. For example, we used to have Oromo parties.
Yeah.
In Amsterdam, my dad and my mom, they were always very involved in the organization. My dad was part of an association, Oromo Association in Amsterdam.
Very cool.
Yeah. And my mom was always part of the cooking. So they were very involved in this. And the only way I could describe kind of these Oromo parties is to have something like a culture to still practice while being in the diaspora. So what would happen is there would be Oromo food, and there would be, so it would just be a performance of Oromo music. So it would just be as simple as maybe a cassette or CD, having some boxes, like speakers, stereos, and just people dancing. And they would rent out like gyms, you know, they would rent out like school buildings and just come together and go to these parties and enjoy each other's company, the food and the music. So I would go there like twice a year, actually. I would always go twice a year. Doesn't matter how young you are, you would always just be brought there by your parents. So it was always me with like other children, babies even. Older people, everyone was there.
Is the Oromo community in the Netherlands big or small, you would say?
Now it's bigger with the so-called refugee crisis. But the influx of Ethiopian and also Eritrean, and therefore also Oromo refugees in 2015 has impacted kind of the amount a lot. But when I was born, it was a way smaller community. And I think for that reason, it was way more important also to have these gatherings and come together to really feel, because everyone lived somewhere else because you couldn't choose where you wanted to have a house, you know, back in the day, if you came as a refugee or immigrant. So Some lived in Amsterdam, some lived in Breda, some lived in Maastricht. So this was really a reason to come together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were younger, did you fully grasp Oromo songs? Or do you feel like when you're older, you're listening to a song and now it gives another meaning than it did for you when you were little?
That's a good question. For me, I never really understood Oromo music.
Yeah. It's a bit difficult.
Yeah, it is very difficult, the meanings of it. Because even if you are fluent, even I asked my mom to this day, meanings of certain songs, or what does he say there, what does she say there? She says, I don't know.
Yeah.
What is being said, but maybe also doesn't understand the meanings because of metaphors that are used. But yeah, especially back then when I was a child, no. Now, maybe also because I'm listening with way more care and I'm trying to actually understand what is being said, I grasp some words here and there, but I don't think I understand like the full meaning, because I think it has like several layers, like what's actually being said literally, then maybe like second meaning to it, maybe even a third meaning.
So in 2018, Abiy Ahmed was elected as president of Ethiopia, and he's half Oromo, half Amhara. And since then, since he was elected, people have seen it as something to be hopeful for. Now you have someone that's also Oromo in a leadership position in Ethiopia. But do you think the situation for Oromos has been better since he came into power, or is it still the same?
Thank you. That's a very good question. Yes and no. I think definitely things have been changing. I think Abiy Ahmed, after he was instated into power, things have definitely changed, but I don't know if I should I should give him the credit for that. I think before him being in power, things were already changing. The Oromos have been oppressed and persecuted a lot, censored a lot throughout history in the context of the Ethiopian state. An example of that is the ex-emperor Haile Selassie. I think it was 1946 maybe, where there was a ban on speaking Afan Oromo, which is the language of Oromo, in public sectors, so in schools and in companies and government jobs. It was absolutely forbidden to speak the language. So, and there have been other policies also to kind of forcefully assimilate the Oromo people into Amhara culture. So that's like a process of Amharization, which has been happening for a long time. Another example is the first Oromo band who started in Diredawa. Their name is Afran Carlo, who were persecuted for, you know, starting a band speaking and singing in Afan Oromo. They were persecuted, and a lot of them had to flee to Somalia, mostly Somalia and Europe. And one of them actually lives in Europe also right now. He's still alive. So while like these two examples are not the case right now, you know, singers can perform in their language, in Afan Oromo. Afan Oromo can be spoken in schools and these types of environments. Still, the situation is not perfect now that Abiy Ahmed is in power. There's still a lot of like a big sentiment of not being happy by the Oromo people. So while this is the case, there's still this big sentiment of being unhappy amongst the Oromo people in Ethiopia and the diaspora, because of continued oppression. And there's many singers who speak out about this, politicians. So yeah, even until today, there are very pro, I would say pro Oromo nationalistic songs being made.
Yeah.
And a person who who was known for this is ex-singer Hachalu Hundessa, who passed away. I think it was 2019 or 2020. And he was killed, some say, because his passing was very questionable, very suspicious.
Yeah.
And many Oromo people actually, you know, accused the Ethiopian state for doing this. So even the fact that this is happening, a singer who was very pro Oromo, suspiciously gets murdered or mm-hmm. killed or passes away. He was attacked. And then people accusing the Ethiopian state, I think this is the perfect example of showing how the situation has not changed that much. There's a lot of mistrust amongst Oromos in Ethiopia for the government. And I think this kind of initial excitement
mm-hmm.
amongst Oromo people was because after such a long time, someone who was Oromo was actually also
speaking to the Oromo people.
Yeah, speaking to the Oromo people and actually targeting them and
mm-hmm.
saying, okay, yeah, you know, I see your pain and let's change this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people were very excited and less so about him being half Oromo, because actually the ex-emperor Haile Selassie was also part Oromo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a quarter
mm-hmm.
or half, I don't know for sure. But because amongst Oromo, you have also this idea of you are only really Oromo if you actually stand by the struggle.
Okay.
So you can be Oromo, you can have the ethnicity, both your parents can be Oromo. But if you don't side with the Oromo, if you don't try to stand with the cause, be there for the struggle and all these things, you are not actually seen as Oromo, even though you speak the language and everything. So it's kind of a fluid identity as well. Yeah.
So if you assimilate to Amhara culture and you say everything is fine, there's no oppression, you're not seen as an Oromo.
Yeah, probably by some you are, but this concept of Oromuma is basically like Oromo political identity.
Mm-hmm.
And this political identity is so close actually to your ethnic identity.
Yeah.
Because so much of the history of the Oromo in Ethiopia has been, like the recent history has been oppression and actually fighting for self-determination.
Yeah.
So if you don't adhere to the political identity, mm-hmm. how can you actually then be part of the ethnic or cultural identity?
Yeah.
So I think if there's peace and everything is fine, maybe the political identity isn't as important,
mm-hmm.
but I think in this case it's very important. So a lot of people, now that Abiy Ahmed is recently mm-hmm. obviously he didn't come true or he didn't come true with his word, a lot of them,
the situation is maybe worser now,
the situation is
in Ethiopia,
and not even only for the Oromo, it's terrible. I think, there's probably no Oromos in Ethiopia who actually see him as an Oromo person, even though still his mom or his dad is Oromo, was Oromo. Yeah.
So in your thesis, you're writing about Oromo music being used as a tool of resistance, and you found a very interesting similarity with Palestinian music.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. I saw a lot of similarities with the Palestinian struggle and the Oromo struggle, and the way they use art and music as a tool to express that oppression and express the sentiments and struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was told actually is that almost 80% of Palestinian music has to do with nation making, actually, in a way, nation building,
mm-hmm.
and imagining kind of like a home that's peaceful and that they can go back to, especially also by Palestinians in diaspora, because of course, because of the ongoing war, there's many that live in exile in Lebanon or other other countries. And I found it very interesting. I found it very, very interesting because I see so many parallels with the Oromo struggle and the way they use music also as a way of like nation building and imagining a future, a positive and peaceful future. Looking back at when times were maybe better, you know? There's also a lot of songs where a man is singing about a beautiful woman and how much he loves her and certain aspects, you know, of her body. But then actually when you read like between the lines, it's not about a woman, but it's also about the land, about Oromia. And it's about the landscapes, actually, instead of the body. And it's about like loving the land, quite literally. So yeah, I find it very interesting how two groups in very different parts of the world, but in maybe somewhat a similar situation, very different still, of course, but both plagued by oppression, are using this tool to fight back, basically. Fight back to the state.
So would you say Oromo music is political, or would you say that it just depends on the music you're listening to?
Yes, I would say in general, yes, actually.
Yeah.
I would. Of course, you can find songs that are about actual just, you know, love stories, and it's just about like the day-to-day life, or you have kettle songs, you know, you have songs or for the rain, you have songs for God, you know. So actually not all of them, but I would say majority is very political, actually. Very, very political. And of course it's also just time specific, because probably when you listen to songs maybe from like 1810, maybe it's different, I don't know. But like the recent songs, like from the 70s, 60s, 70s up to now, many songs are actually used as to spread a political awareness, to talk about the political situation.
Because singing in a language that was once forbidden can be seen as continuing the resistance against the Amharization of Ethiopia. So I can see how, even if it's about love, a love song, that it's still political.
Good catch.
Thank you so much, Fayo, for coming to the podcast. It was lovely having you here. It was, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
And I wish you can come back one time.
Yes, definitely. Just let me know when.
I will let you know.
Thank you so much for listening to Calling Home, and see you next week.